This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by ThePerfectTrick.com. We appreciate Eric Citron being our sponsor, and I do want to tell you that he's the name and the face behind the company, ThePerfectTrick.com. Eric has been a longtime friend of the Magic Word and supporter, and has been listening probably since day one, and has also been someone who has sponsored magic conventions and is a mind reader, medalist, a performer himself, and decided to open up an online shop. And he is a very honest guy. I trust him, just a great guy. So I've enjoyed my relationship and friendship with him over the years, and I think if you develop a relationship with an online magic supplier, this certainly is the one that you should think about, because Eric's a great guy, and he's a man of his word, and so he'll deliver, and you'll enjoy him as a magic dealer for your supplies, finding that perfect trick, which is why he calls the company ThePerfectTrick.com. So, Eric, thanks again for sponsoring the Magic Word Podcast, and I hope, the listeners, that you'll go and check them out. And if you use the code phrase WORD in the promo checkout, whenever that you check out, you'll get a 10% discount for listening to the Magic Word. Just put in their word. And thanks to ThePerfectTrick.com for your sponsorship. Well, this week I'm going to kind of dip back into the archives a little bit and tell you that there were a couple of guys who have been some of the popular guests that we've had on the Magic Word, and people have said they've really enjoyed the podcast that I'd had with these two individuals. First is Fielding West, and the other one is Earl Chaney, both of whom reside in Las Vegas, Nevada, and they have a lot of interesting overlap, I guess, kind of in their careers as to people they know and have worked with in and around the Las Vegas area. So it is really kind of cool that I had this opportunity to sit down with each of them together, actually. As I said, that we've had some podcasts in the past that have featured them individually. And one that goes a few years back was one that I had with Earl Chaney, in which he was talking about the tales from old Las Vegas, because he, again, had been around for so long. I mean, you mention anybody, whether it's from Elvis, Frank Sinatra, Wayne Newton, or anybody, he's got personal stories about all of these guys, of having worked with them or lived near them or, you know, hung out with them or whatever. But so does Fielding West. You know, Fielding's got great stories also about Frank Sinatra, Liberace, pretty much you name it. So it was interesting. And then whenever I had a conversation with Fielding a while back, about a year or so ago, and we had just a delightful conversation over a few martinis, and that was just a whole heck of a lot of fun. Well, this year when I was at Magic Live, I took off one afternoon to go over to Fielding's house for a birthday party celebration, in which he had a few friends over, and one of them happened to be Earl Chaney. And so as we were kind of sitting around after we had had a hamburger and hot dog, and we were just chatting, and one person was telling one story, and then the other one started telling another story. I said, just a minute, let me just turn on my microphone. This is going to be great. So there were some other people sitting around as well, and so you'll be hearing also at the table joining me was my favorite magician, Ray Anderson. Ray was had contributed a couple of things in the background, so you'll hear him kind of join in partway in there also. But anyhow, there were some other things going on that day, and so again, that we didn't have a long conversation, but it was delightful and funny, and they shared a lot of stories. Seems like that one person could start a story, another one could finish it or add something to it, and it was just a delightful afternoon. Again, it was relatively short, but gives me an opportunity then to, on the back end of this podcast, to do some product reviews, which we're going to have. But for right now, I want to introduce to you, for this week's podcast, Mr. Fielding West and Earl Chaney, here on The Magic Word. All right, so now we're over at Fielding West House, and a bunch of guys around over here, and I've got a couple of people who have been on the podcast here before, And I think it's interesting to have the two together to tell some stories. One of them is Earl Chaney, who was on Old Vegas and then Fielding West. So I'm going to kind of put this over here. Do you mind, Fielding, telling that story one more time about Al Goshman? I'm just going to put this right here.
Well, there's a lot of stories about Al Goshman. Everybody knew that he ate like a pig. In fact, when he went to England the first time, and he was going to be in the presence of the Queen at the at Windsor, they actually took and put Al in the corner, and they put a, like a, what do you call those things that you get dressed behind? A dressing screen around Al.
Yeah.
So the Queen did not get, the Queen did
a bigger
not get,
one.
A Queen did not get to watch him eat. Because he actually would take his tie, wipe his mouth with his tie, and he would do all this stuff. But the famous story about Al's eating was how he cleaned up afterwards. He had food all over his shirt, he had a white shirt on, and instead of wiping it off, he would reach in his pocket and he would pull out that same kind of paint that's used for white bucks. Remember the band guys in high school had those white buck shoes, and it had the, you know, the white, the little rubber
spongy
kind of thing on the end. And he would shake it, and then he would just dab that thing all over all the brown and red and green spot, whatever he had on his shirt, and he would just like white out. He was whiting out his own shirt. So that's the Al Goshman story. He was the greatest, one of the greatest.
But then the SpongeBob thing you were talking about.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Al goes to England. He's going to do his first lecture there. I don't know what the year was. Johnny Thompson could tell you this better than I could. But they take 10,000 SpongeBalls and they put it in, with a piece of cardboard. They press it down into inside of a suitcase. And then they close the lid and the guys manage to get their fingers out of there and they lock it up. He gets to England and the customs guy says, sir, what's in this suitcase? And Al, instead of saying it's SpongeBalls, he says, oh, no, you don't want to open that case. That's a bad choice of words to tell a custom agent. So now he says, is there anything explosive in here? And he goes, well, now they've got him detained.
Yeah.
And so they send two expert guys in, and they determine that there's no bombs or anything else, and they pop the lid, and 10,000 SpongeBalls blow out of the suitcase and completely fill a room up with it, the small room that it was in. And so Al comes in, he says, okay, I told you not to do that. Can one of your guys help me put these back in here? And the guy, you know, piss off, whatever. And they just left Al on his own. So he left a lot of SpongeBalls at the border.
Can do a lot of things with SpongeBob.
Yes, yes, you can.
Yeah, one of them. One main thing is you can't get them back into a suitcase.
God, they weren't the Magic Bean Dogs.
Oh, yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Many of them.
I have a very funny story about how I got fired from a job with one of Al's Magic Ding Dongs. You know, this is the first time that microphones look very intimidating to me.
And it's bigger and bigger.
I'm not really sure I want to share this with your audience. Maybe we'll do this at another time. I called it a dictaphone.
Dictaphone? That's right.
It's kind of a visual thing, if you understand what we're talking about.
If you know, the sponge ding dong.
The sponge ding dong is exactly what you can put your imagination to. Yeah.
Well, then they came out with the jumbo one, too.
They did?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They.
I guess you go with
his son.
I guess you have to have bigger hands for the jumbo.
Just use your bigger imagination.
There you go.
Now, Ronald McDonald will never use anything like that, I guess.
No. Oh, no, no, no. I was asked once, though, in Steve Daly's show, and they asked me and another guy, they have a deal where they're asking what you call your private parts, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And the guy was on, he asked a friend of mine, agent, a different AJ, but a black photographer, he said, what do you call yours? And he said, White Snake. And everybody laughed like hell. And then I don't know why, unless Steve told the guy to pick on us, and then he said, looked at me straight, because we were second row, and I don't like, you know, I'm usually sitting in the back.
Yeah.
He said, what do you call yours? I said, what? What do you call it? I said, oh, Big Mac. Oh, and sometimes a quarter pounder. With cheese.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, this is the wrong group for me to talk in.
No.
Little Butch has always been with
That's
me.
What makes these good. What makes these good podcasts is telling the truth and the good story.
That's right.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can get in trouble, but I'm not afraid of it.
Well, I don't know which of the two of you guys have told the most stories, you know, because every time I mention something to Earl about Elvis or Frank Sinatra, you got 12 stories, or living across the street from Wayne Newton, and then
right.
talk to Fielding, and he's got two or three stories atop of you, and then you top him, and you guys, I tell you, I don't know anyone.
If you lived in Vegas for over 35 years, almost 40 years, he's lived here longer than I have.
Yeah.
You know.
He knew the mob. Before you knew the mob.
Well, we all knew the mob because that's who ran the town, and
yeah.
that's back when it was a better place to work.
Yeah.
And
it was, too.
We didn't have resort fees. We didn't have paid parking. We didn't have a lot of stuff. People dressed to go to shows. There was less crime. It was a very nice place to live.
49-cent shrimp cocktails.
49-cent shrimp cocktails.
All you could eat barbecue ribs for $1.49. Breakfast,
$1.49, wasn't it?
Yeah,
circus.
Yeah, and Mr.
Lucky's.
No, there was a place that had free breakfast and lunch. It was a little place on the strip, and one of my buddies, ex-Ringling clown, Mr. Size. Yeah,
yeah.
And he told me one day. Bob said, "I'm not going down there to have breakfast anymore." And I said, "What?" He said, "I'm not having breakfast." And I said, "Bob, it's free." And he said, "Why?" He said, "Because they just don't give me enough to eat." And I said, "Well, damn it, it's free. What do you want for nothing?" I said, "Go beg somewhere else then," because he had free lunch and free breakfast. I mean,
well,
it was amazing.
Today they'd say it's an all-you-can-eat. And you'd say, "Well, that doesn't look like much," and they'd go, "That's all you can eat."
You get out of here now.
Yeah.
You get out now.
Like John Panette. There you go. You go now.
Yeah.
Now, imagine the rooms were cheap too, right?
Oh my God.
They gave the rooms away.
That's right.
If you were gambling, they gave the rooms away.
Yeah.
Palace Station was
much like Ray Anderson.
But you,
when it was they give them away, but you pay for them.
But you pay for them one way or another. There you go.
Yeah, I know well.
Oh, tell me about it.
Were you guaranteed to have to gamble so much? Or
no.
Well, now they've got you on a card system,
right.
and they track.
They track you. And you have a host that takes care.
Hell,
of
with, by the time the cards came in, though, I was a big gambler at one time. I mean, I lost 5 houses more than I could have owned.
Wow.
At least I lost a lot of money.
You know, I mean,
because I was making a lot of money with residuals from commercials I was shooting, so I spent a lot of time. And I was bored.
Were you shooting for McDonald's?
I was shooting for McDonald's, and I was still the Armor Star hot dog clown. I did that for 4 years.
At the same time.
Armor hot dog.
Yeah. Big kids, little kids, even kids with chicken pots love hot dogs. Armor hot dogs.
It's the dog kids love to bite.
And that's how old this crowd is, ladies and gentlemen.
But the Bingo Palace, which is now half the town, is Palace Station. It was $9.95 just a night, and I've seen them as cheap as $5.95 in town. And I used to go stay just on a weekend for funnies because I didn't want to go to the house. You know,
I thought, too much to drink. It's cheaper to stay here at the hotel. I can get up and go home in the morning. Right. Exactly.
And when the card came out, because I remember the only time they said, "Earl, I don't know if we can do that." I had 12 people with me, 12 guys, and we wanted lobster. And I said, "Well, let's go lobster," because I got comped everything. And I told the pit boss, and he said, "Oh, Earl, we can't do that. 12 people." He said, "No, 6 is all you can do." I said, "Well, then make 2 comps for 6 each. You know, you're going to do it one way or the other." I spent the most I ever lost there. Once Michelle, my wife, the third wife, she was going to Paris to work with Cliff Robinson to do a movie, and I went in. I had $11,000 in my pocket, and she played slots, and I said, "I'm going to go win some money where I can have more fun in Paris." I lost $11,000 in 35 minutes. And I wasn't betting. $600 was the biggest. I was playing blackjack because I was weaning myself from craps. Because I could lose a lot of money playing craps.
What was that joke where the wife comes up and she says, I need another $50 for the slot machine? He goes, no. no, no, you lose your money all the time. No, how's that joke go? And she says, you lost $1,500 yesterday. And he said, yeah, but I know what I'm doing.
I know how to gamble.
That's
well, Michelle came back and said, how'd you do? And I said, I lost it. She said, see ya. She went to Paris. I didn't go. I said, you go ahead. I'm going to have to recover.
I did a show downtown. This is a true story. I was at the Lady Luck. There, and I was working with Melinda at the time. So we did two shows a night. This is back in the 90s. So I'm a specialty actor. Melinda shows, she's doing two shows. So I walk out to the casino and I see this lady sitting at a slot machine right at the front door of the Lady Luck, of the showroom. And she's playing. I said, why don't you come in? I said, here's some tickets for the show. My friends didn't show up. I'm going to comp you into the show. She goes, oh, thank you, honey. So the show's over. I walk back out. Same lady sitting there. The tickets are still sitting in her little... back then, they had little buckets, and you had your change and your money in the buckets. Right. It's not like it is today, where they give you a ticket. So there it was, and I said, don't you want to see the show? Those tickets will be good for the second show. Why don't you come and see the second show? I promise, honey, I'll be right there for the second show. I come out of the second show. She's still sitting there. I said, lady, have you gotten up? Have you even moved? She says, this machine's pretty hot. She got the same amount of change in my two tickets and the butt thing there. She says, but I think my butt went to sleep. And I immediately said, yeah, I think I heard it snoring. And I just turned and walked away. That was all there was.
That was the day when there were coins, real money.
Yeah,
that,
you can actually work. Hear stuff coming.
And all the little ladies always had white gloves on.
Right.
And
yeah.
Pulling that machine. And they'd always have somebody come up and sit beside them. And one, they were always older women. And one said, the other one said, are you here long? And she said, no, not really. I said, well, where are you staying? Well, I'm not staying anywhere. I'm only here for 3 days. And that's what they do.
Yeah.
The smartest guy in the world was the guy that owned, I don't remember his name, but Lance Burton should be telling you this story. The guy that owned the Lady Luck would be in L.A. And he would pull up a bus called the Lucky Bus, the Lucky Lady Bus. And when people came out of the Social Security office with their checks on a Friday, he said, I will take you and put you up for free in my hotel, and all you got to do is play a little bit, and I will feed you. And he would put hundreds of people on 4, 5, 6 buses, and he would fill his hotel up and then take all these people with no money back to L.A. on Monday.
Wow.
And that's how they built the Lady Luck Hotel.
Well, that's,
get Lance to tell you that story.
He's in the other room.
The gambling like that in history is unbelievable. I mean, even in the circus, now, and this is something a lot of people don't know. You have to really read a lot of stuff. They paid us in cash because we didn't. I had a bank account in Florida, but you could never get there, you know. So you have an envelope, and with a staple in it, and it had a check. And you'd tear that off and sign it and hand it back to the paymaster. And there was the money was in the envelope.
Yep.
And so each week, you'd get in line to do that. Well, in the old days, in the tent days, there was a red tent between the pay wagon and the big top. All the people had to go through the red tent to get their paychecks, and then they had to go back through it. In the red tent, there was 2 slot machines. Oh, there was a blackjack game going on. And there was hardly anybody, especially the working men, never got away from Friday night without all their money gone.
Wow.
And they
work for free.
I love cruise ships because Carnival Cruises is exactly like the circus was. They don't pay anybody. They didn't pay the hell on the show. They fed them and gave them a room 4 feet wide and 6 feet long. But they didn't get any money. Same thing on the cruise. They put them down below. They're not allowed to go get up and mingle around. They don't pay them, but they have slot machines down there to take the money for the tips, the way they used to get the tips.
Right.
Now they take the whole different deal, too. We're just going to make you pay the tip no matter what.
Right.
But
well, speaking of pay, what did they pay in the old days? I mean, like we were talking about when the hotels were $5 or $15 a night. What did they pay the acts?
Well, the acts in this town actually...
They went from very high to very low.
That's right.
They went from, you guys could be making $5,500, $7,500 a night to $1,000 to $1,500 a week.
Carlton made a lot of money.
Carlton made a lot of money on
the strip with his animals in those days.
He had exotics. And Carlton Company. Yeah.
That would be
Liberace.
80s?
Yeah, Liberace was making $150,000 a week in 1956. So
1956.
Yep.
Joe Scandori was Don Rickles' manager.
Yeah.
And Don Rickles was working for the Sahara Hotel. So he goes in to talk to, who was the guy that owned the Sahara? Back, his wife ran for office.
Webb.
No. Anyways, it'll come to me in a minute. But it doesn't matter. He goes in. Joe Scandori goes in. And he says, "I need to talk to so and so." And he says, he says, "Is everything okay? Is Don happy here?" And he says, "Well, you know, Don's been here half a year, and but he's going to need some more money." He says, "I pay him $100,000 a week." He says, "How about $110,000? And the owner of the hotel says, $110,000 a week?" And Scandori says, "Guy's got to eat." And that's a very famous story about Joe Scandori.
But it was the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 70s, goodness gracious, it was, and I didn't know that later the casino would come out with what the Stardust was really doing, because I was dating a little gal that was, her dad was part of the boys,
with the group, yeah.
And he took me outside of his house once and told me what I should do with his daughter, you know, be nice to her.
Nice to her.
Mr. Undog Girl, okay, but... I was working in the daytime. I was clowning, of course, and doing whatever you know I could. But she was working downstairs, and I wanted to be with her in the basement. And that's when they were walking out with $1 million a day in briefcases, taking it out of the cage.
Wow!
And right out.
Well, I'm wondering, you talk about Liberace making all that money. But now his museum is closed and his house is all run down. You know, $1 million doesn't get you very far anymore. What it did.
Well, a lot of the people that claim to be his fans and his executors picked through what was left, and by the time you got down to the bottom, there wasn't anything to protect anymore. Everybody took something from Lee, and there was nothing left at the end. There was not even enough for a museum. So,
yeah, but boy, his house went up for sale here,
and he had sold it just recently again. But
how much did that go for? You know?
I don't know, but they couldn't sell it forever because the scare
it was now
so
in a commercial area.
Yeah,
where there's commercial property around it. The city grew up around where Lee's
place
was.
He used to have some hellacious parties there.
Well, when you walked in the door, the first thing that you walked around was the hot tub. So the door, the big doors and the chandeliers, the first thing you walked around was that hot tub. So you can just imagine what Lee had in his hot tub. So when you walked in the house, I think everything was... It was to me like going to Esther's Follies and looking out the window on the sidewalk. There was always another story going on someplace else.
Right outside there.
Yes, it was.
So you're saying it was like a big bowl of soup then.
You know. Thank you. I
got a visual image on that one.
I just couldn't quite get that out.
It was stuck in your back of your mouth.
That's it.
So, what were the parties like?
Well, the parties were... At that time in my career, I was rooming with Barry Lee. Did you ever know Barry Lee?
Oh, yeah. Barry Lee's one of the five
people. Barry Lee, at one time, almost owned this town for 7 years.
Yeah, he worked three shows at one time, had a moped, and went from show to show and never had to take a... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, he's exactly right. He bought this bike where he could get from one end of the strip because he was out to Hacienda working, you know, and then get back down to the Stardust or where he'd work for everybody.
And he had a piece of rope, some balloons, and
an Australian.
Was he a clown or a magician?
No, comedy magician.
Comedy magic, and just was solid as the day is long.
I could do his act right now for you instantly.
He used to park cars at the Magic Castle.
Park cars.
And he went in and he would watch.
He helped build.
What are you doing? Some things downstairs.
And he not only did his act, but he did it with an accent.
Actually helping to see out of your way.
Jimmy Ray.
He lived.
Ray Laverne.
Where they filmed Batman in a cave in Hollywood. Yeah. He lived up there for a while. He lived in the backyard of some actor, struggling actor. He put a tent out there in the backyard by a tree and had him put a phone on the tree.
Oh, the phone on the tree.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you the craziest. Because we had two Rolls Royces, and we'd get the worst jeans and T-shirts and everything we could, and at, like the Hilton and Bally's when MGM was great, you know. We'd pull up knowing exactly when the shows were going to stop, you know. And in those days, everybody was in tux and suits and nice dresses and everything. We'd pull up, give it to valet. They wouldn't take it away right there in front. We'd go in, and Barry would always go in and page himself. And they'd go, paging Mr. Barry Lee. And he'd go, he'd look around. Is that Earl? Is that somebody paging me? Where everybody would know they was there. But then the show would break. Everybody would go outside waiting for their cars. And Barry and I would squeeze through, and he'd put his finger up, and the valet would get the start the car. And everybody's going, who in the hell's getting in a Rolls Royce? And we'd get in a Rolls Royce. Anything for a laugh. U.S. Toy in Hollywood, we used to buy a lot of junk in there. Anything for a laugh. He'd do anything. He bought one of the best chimpanzee masks I ever saw, a complete full head mask. Uh-huh. And both the Rolls Royces we had were right-hand steering. And he would drive, and I'd get some little gal in the back seat. And if you pull up beside a stoplight, people are always going to do this to look. And when they see it's a Rolls, and they look, and it was a chimpanzee, and it started going, whoa, 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 and just go crazy. And then they look in the back, and I'd kind of go, what the hell? Why are they looking at? Who are they looking at? I mean, we did. We had so much fun in this town. It was amazing. But that was when it was the good old days, you know.
Well, all, the 80s was the end of that. So.
Yeah, it was, unfortunately. And everything
was the Frontier was the last of the mob owned, and that was the first place I ever went when I came here to Vegas. First place I ever stayed.
Frontier
was
the
last of the mob owned places. And they ran it better than anybody. I never felt more welcome in my life than I did at a mob.
That was Lefty...
Rosenthal.
Yeah, Lefty Rosenthal was the character.
Stardust.
Yeah.
I worked for him. I never called him Lefty, or I'd ended up in one of the holes
outside.
The
lawyer were working there.
Mr. Rosenthal was the name.
86, which I just found out what that means.
86,
you know, is somebody being banned from a hotel.
He said it in some
But the original term came from take him 8 miles out of town and bury him 6 feet deep.
And see what was unique about those days? Honestly, you could have won $150,000, and you could walk out in the street, and nobody'd ever touch
you. You could have stuffed your pockets full of cash and walked any place on the strip, and nobody would have come near you.
If they did, they'd never get to the airport.
Those days, you would have never seen the people walk through a casino dressed the way they do now.
No, of course.
And you wouldn't be seeing fights and drunks like falling on the floor and getting into the elevators and stuff. You wouldn't have seen that back then.
No,
everybody wore a coat and tie, ladies' dress. It's now it's flip flop city, as we call it. So that's it.
And it's a shame.
No, it's not. And I miss it. You know.
Yeah.
I've been here 44 years and I miss it.
Been here 39 years and this is...
Well, I was lucky I caught the tail end.
We met right when he came to town.
It's one of the first people I met when I came out here. I was in a show at the Mint Hotel, and of course you all know the story. We've talked about this from my... manager lost money on the crap table.
Oh, yeah.
And then through the
That's how you met Lee.
Yeah, and when I met Liberace, and Liberace got me my first break, that was the beginning of my career here. And it took about a month, but Lee was the
Have
reason.
Have you heard this?
No.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they go back and listen to the podcast, hear this, but just...
I was Carlton, who's here right now, allowed me to park in front of his house and allowed me to bathe my first assistant night. We could bathe, and he said... they're shooting a TV show called the Jimmy Awards, named after Jimmy Durante. It's a star-studded event, but here's the after-show mezzanine. You want to go, you can meet all these stars. There's going to be Tony Orlando and Joan Rivers and Siegfried and Roy and Liberace and Tina Turner, and they start naming all these people. I said, my goodness. So I put on a three-piece suit. My gal got dressed up. We went up there. Nobody knew who we were. So when we walked on the mezzanine with our own passes, everybody instantly assumed that we were with the network. I did not find this out till later. So now I had two plastic bags in each pocket because we had no food or any money. And I knew there was going to be food there. So I said, we're going to rob this place. We're going to take food home with us so we have something to eat. So we get up there, and they had these giant shrimps. And I picked up a shrimp, and I looked this way, and then looked this way. Nobody's around. I'd palm that thing and go right into my pocket and stick that shrimp in my pocket. Then I'd pick up another shrimp, and I'd look all the way around. I'd act like I was eating that shrimp, and I'd go in the other pocket. I get to the third shrimp, and I hear this voice behind me go, What are you putting shrimp in your pocket? What are you doing? And I turn around, there's Liberace right in my face. We're across the room and we're watching you put shrimp in your pocket. What are you doing? Who are you? And it's just that's how the conversation started. And so I told him the story about the manager losing the money on the craft table. He said, you need to go to the Sahara Hotel. You need to see Sandy Hackett and Terry James, oh, because they have showcase there, and you can showcase your way and get a manager. I said, we were there last week. They put us on at 1 in the morning. No one saw us. So he said, somebody bring me a phone. So this is, I love telling this story nowadays because no one understands what a phone is, let alone plugging it into a wall. So we plugged the phone in the wall. He says, hi, this is Lee. This is Liberace. Can you give me Jack Eglash at the Sahara Hotel? Hi, Jack. It's Lee. Listen, I have a very, very charming young man that I have my eye on.
And his shrimp, too.
Now, I do not know.
Jumbo shrimp.
I do not know what this means from Shinola.
Yeah.
What's Shinola?
Just
yeah. What's charming? Okay, so we go down, and so now we go down and do the showcase. They put us on at 9 to get a manager and an agent. Sandy Hackett comes back to say, Jack Eglash and Liberace want you to come out to the table. And I'm backstage making out with my assistant. And Sandy Hackett looks in the room and goes, oh, my God, I'm confused. Are you not... Okay, listen, they want you to meet him at the table. I'm leaving. So I go out to the table. Lee says, you guys did a great job. Jack, hire these guys, give them a job. And he said, here's Russ Geary, here's Billy Rizzo. They're sending you, they're going to be your first manager agents, and you're going to be opening for Chubby Checkers all across the country of Canada, and you're leaving in a week and a half. And that was, boom, that was it. It was that fast. I said, thank you, Lee. And then that next time I saw him was 2.5 years later when they opened Splash. Now, he had cancer of the stomach, which is, I guess, the way his AIDS, HIV, manifested itself. But I saw him there, and he saw us before we saw him. And he goes, oh, that's Fielding and Pam. And he starts calling us. And I walked up to him, and I knew he was sick because I'd been reading about him in the Enquirer. And I said, Lee, I said, look at you. I said, I know that you're not well, but my God, you look great. You've lost all this weight. And he goes, can you believe it? He says, I'm wearing stuff I haven't worn in 20 years. And he was just excited about it. Yeah. And he just said, you didn't let me down. You made me proud. I'm so happy. I see you're on the strip as an opening act in Bravo Vegas at the Imperial Palace. And I said, thank you so much. He said, I knew you guys were going to be a great fit. Yeah. And that was it. And so, and then he died about 2 months after that.
Wow.
Yeah. But what a great guy.
Who's that?
Liberace.
And you knew him too then.
Oh, yeah.
Quite well.
Yeah.
Said you went to his party.
Everybody knew Liberace.
Oh, yeah.
He was a prince of a human being to everybody on the strip.
He had a driver in a station wagon. It was painted like a piano. And he'd always have the window down and just go waving at everybody. And,
like the Queen.
Yeah, he loves it. I mean, he was great. He was great.
Yeah.
And just like you said, too, that everybody in the old days, that's how you got your gigs, through somebody else, you know.
Mm-hmm. If somebody recommended
somebody,
you, mm-hmm. And then that was...
And the casinos was
all the endorsement you needed.
I ended up knowing every guy that owned all the... Michael Gong, which at the Orleans, where we're at, I started doing shows for Michael when his kids were just babies, you know.
Yeah.
And even the last time I saw him, which was about a decade ago, he couldn't believe it. Because he'd always call me, he stuttered, and he'd say, Mr. Clown. He said that when his Michael Jr. was a grown guy almost. He said he was trying to say, I probably wouldn't come around the house to do shows anymore. And his wife said, how dare you say that to Mr. Clown? He's going to come. I don't care if the kids are 45 years old. He's going to come to the barbecues and everything else, you know. And so, I mean, I got all kinds of work because of that kind of stuff. Again, like I was, my first big gig was for Frank Sinatra, for Barbara, and I worked for him for years. But that was because the president of Caesar's Palace was one of my clients. And I didn't know. His wife asked me once at their house, said, you know who my husband is? And I said, no, because I wasn't pushy. I wasn't going, oh, you want to, what can you do for me?
Yeah.
And she said, because she said, why don't you work in the casinos? And I said, I don't have the juice. And she said, that's when she said, well, my husband, I think, can take care of it.
He'll not be able to take care of it for you.
And he did.
And he did. In a week, he called me, or a secretary did. And that was, he said, would you like to do a gig here in the penthouse? And I said, yeah, for who? And he said, Frank Sinatra. And I said, yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
And those were, and I never took pictures. I was never a big star. Right. I was around so many stars for so many years on the Ringling Show because they all came to see us. Mm-hmm. That's what was strange about the circus, because when you leave the circus, it's like really leaving your home, you know, and you're all of a sudden in a brand new world. You don't know why you're not knowing everybody and they're not coming to see you. Mm-hmm. Because Lucille Ball, all those people came to us and wanted to work with us, which was amazing. Amazing.
Right.
And you thought, you really thought you was a star.
Now, touring with them, or where was that actually?
Yeah, that, okay. No, they wouldn't tour with
them. No. I'm saying when you were touring.
Yeah.
I mean, they set up. Oh, yeah. You're not talking, we're like working circus here.
Oh, no, no. No, yeah. Ringling Brothers. Yeah, Ringling Brothers. Right. Yeah. Lucille Ball was, the first time I met Cher, she was, well, I ended up in Enquirer because Chastity, well, that was when, no, yeah, she was a girl then. Yeah, before she became a guy. I was just joking. But she was our ring mistress on a Saturday on the early show, which was 11:30 in the morning. And Chastity was pissed because she was there. And she's out, and I had to take her out to the ring, the center ring, with her mother. And as I started, I had her by the hand, and she started screaming bloody murder, pulling back and screaming, just having a fit. And it was a million photographers. And about 2 weeks later, I'm traveling somewhere else because I was going overland at that time. And one of the clowns said, oh, my God, Mr. Clown's in Enquirer, and Sonny Bono's going to have him killed, you know. Because it was a man that was coming between Sonny Bono and Cher and Chastity. And they crop those pictures like they want of course. And so, but it seemed like every star that was, first time I ever met Jimmy Stewart, I wanted to talk about him doing Buttons the Clown in The Greatest Show on Earth, you know.
Sure.
He would not hear about it. All he wanted to do was find out what I was doing and how I was clowning now, you know. It was just amazing.
Interesting stories. Well, I think we're going to have to cut because they're going to go. It's photo time. Thank you, Ray. All right. Thank you, Earl. And Fielding just stepped away then, too.
I have to ask
great stories.
You know my buddy Brett Wall.
Thanks again.
Brett was
so
great.
This is Scotty out.
I absolutely...
Well, I want to thank my recurring guests, Mr. Fielding West and Earl Cheney, both for sharing some of those stories with us here today. And I hope that you guys enjoyed the opportunity to feel like you were kind of sitting at the table with us in this kind of a round table of storytelling. And thanks also to Ray Anderson for filling in a little bit there as well. Just towards the very tail end, just as we were cutting off, Ray was asking Earl whether he knew his friend Breck Wall, who used to work in Vegas, and I cut that off, and I never did finish the rest of finding that out or not. And if anyone's interested, perhaps we might follow up on that at a later time. Nevertheless, I do want to thank my guests and thank you guys for listening then again. And if you like this kind of stories you're hearing here, this kind of podcast with those stories, then let me know, and I'll be glad to see about getting more of those kinds of stories and these guys, because there are a lot of, I know a lot of old guys who know a lot of old stories.
stories. And so I try to have a lot of variety. So I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Well, it's that time again towards the end of the podcast here where we have product reviews from those things which have come from Murphy's Magic Supplies and available from your favorite magic dealer like theperfecttrick.com. The four things we're going to be talking about here today include Perplex by Chris Smith. Next will be TST, which is from Sans Minds. That's Torn, Seal, Transform. And then will be Equilibrium. And this is from magicworld.co.uk. And then finally, we will have another Sans Minds item called Launch, which is a way of turning your wallet into a launch wallet. So, let's get right into it. From Chris Smith comes Perplex. This was produced by Magic on Demand and is a DVD that's approximately a half hour, 45 minutes or so in length, and basically teaches you a couple of things. One is a visual transformation of a playing card, and another way of doing it from the top, another one when you hold it up and you can kind of show it, and when you turn around, place down the card, it has changed. And the second one is the octopus force, which is kind of a clever way of reversing or turning a card over, to have a card forced. Anyhow, the DVD not only teaches you this in pretty good detail, it also, Chris teaches you four really excellent routines using the force as well as the Perplex version 1 and version 2. Again, that the idea is that you show a card, you have a deck of cards, turn over the top card, and just by passing your hand over the card, it visually changes in less than a half a second. I mean, just like that. You turn the card over and then thumb it off the deck, and it is, of course, just a single card. It is very clever. It's something that takes a little bit of handling, a little bit of practice, probably more than just a little bit, in order to do perfectly every time. The octopus force that he teaches, I think there are other kinds of forces that that are better. This is okay. I'm not really wild about it, but it works in the context of the routines that he was teaching. But again, the routines are clever then as well. I like this because you can do it with any deck. It's not like you have to have a prepared deck or anything. But there are a couple of little touches here that I might find fall into my card routine as well as to displaying a card. But it's going to take a little bit of work. And I think if you like to play with cards and kind of like card artistry, because there is a hand juggling having going on here, I think that you'll enjoy this. I would recommend it. I wouldn't say that he's a good teacher from the standpoint that very straightforward on this tape or this tape on this DVD that it is pretty he's very monotonous. He has a very monotone about his teaching method, so it doesn't really show him in performance or this any of the effects that he teaches being done in the real world or anything. It looks like that he is just kind of one of these David Blaine type of street performer or characters in his presentation. But again, I haven't seen him perform, but just based upon what I've seen on his teaching style, is my observation. So anyhow, it is thorough. It is something that I think that you can learn. It's I wouldn't say it's for beginner, but it is kind of a beginner to lower intermediate. It's not all that difficult, but something that I think that is worth looking into. So I kind of recommend it. Again, Perplex, created by Chris Smith. TST from Sans Mind stands for Torn, Seal, Transform. The effect of this is basically where that you would show a small baggie that is about the size that would hold a full playing card, and inside there is a torn corner of a card. Actually, it's a blank corner, and then you have a card selected, and that when you do, you have the return to the deck. And anyhow, let me also point out, this is important, that they actually don't take the card. They just stop someplace. You show them the card, put it back, the deck together, and then whenever that you show the prediction, which you have, this blank card, by just flicking the
baggy that the blank card suddenly changes to the corner of a card. And whenever that you ask them to go through the deck of cards, they find their card. And of course, a corner is missing. You reach inside the baggie and pull out this little torn corner. The effect sounds great. It is okay as far as the effect goes, and I think that with the right handling, it could be made to look even more magical. Certainly it is mysterious from the standpoint that this is a prediction in which that a card does turn out to be correct, but there are a lot of handling things I just don't like. It's just not the cleanest way to do a prediction. The effect TST comes incomplete. It does come with a DVD and also then with an envelope, which includes the elastic thread, which you need in order to make this, because this is one of those DIY projects. You do it yourself. But there's supposed to, I would think there should be a small baggie that would come with this. And I think also some people who don't happen to have that small baggie lying around will have to go out and procure one some way or another. Not a big problem, but I would think that it wouldn't be that much more to go that extra step to include just the baggie that's necessary to do this trick then as well. Anyhow, the explanation is fine. The fellow who does the narration is a foreigner. He has a thick accent, which you can still understand, but there is a closed captioning along the bottom, so this way you can read if you can't hear or understand what he's saying. That's not an issue. That's just fine. It's just the trick itself that I'm just not enamored with. So it's okay. It just takes a while to put the thing together and then kind of play with. And there are a lot of issues with this that I just don't think are worth your time. So I would have to say that this is one I'm going to take a pass on. It's called TST by Sans Minds, and probably going to say not recommended. Daniel Meadows' Equilibrium is produced by magicworld.co.uk. And this effect is based on an Al Coran idea with some variations from my friend Dave Arch that basically will allow you to have a spectator to cut off just a certain portion of cards, less than half of the cards, and then count out another 26 cards remaining, and then you kind of throw off a few of them, and at some point you will have the same number of cards that they had cut off. The trick goes back again to Al Coran way back when, but has been updated. And what you're going to be getting in here is the explanation, of course, how that the trick is done originally, but then also a couple of gimmick cards, a red back and a blue back bicycle card. So this way that you can add this to your deck in order to make this effect the way that they intended with the presentations that they give you here in the tricks. And so the deadly card, or whatever it is that they call this, is something that you could use visually or manually. It's got something on it that is specially made that I think that you would like, that makes it easy to see or feel so that you know where you are whenever it comes to the right card. The trick itself is very good. I think that it could be something in your card act that could be partway into your act. I mean, I wouldn't say this is an opener or closer by any means, but it's something that is a middle, almost a filler. And from that standpoint, as a filler, that doesn't mean that it's very impressive. That does mean that it's okay. It's one of those things, I think, that whenever that you do it, that the audience might say, not be astonished. I think that it's just, again, something that would be almost like a puzzle from that standpoint. It's like, that was clever. How was he able to do that? I think that by using this clever, deadly card that they have, as the gimmick here included, is something that can be used for other kinds of effects, and it's something that can be easily added to or taken away from a deck, so you don't necessarily have to have a deck that is set up and ready to go for doing this trick, although that there are some preparations that you would need to do if you are going to be adding this to make sure that it gets to the right position. Without going any further, let me just say that equilibrium is an okay trick. I like the general idea, I think, where you're kind of balancing the cards, and I think it's a clever idea where that you would have the spectator, again, take off some and you hold them in your hand and you have some in the other hand and you keep peeling cards off until finally you feel as if that you have the same number of cards and then you can count them down. So that way that you do have the same number of cards, or perhaps you could have the spectator to count their cards. So again, this trick is called Equilibrium and it is produced by magicworld.co.uk, and it is, would I recommend it? I would say that it is an okay trick that would be, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe a 3 or 4. It's not something I would highly recommend, nor really just even recommend. I'd probably say it's okay. So, kind of wishy-washy. I'm a little bit less than lukewarm on this. Launch from Sands Mines is an effect where it says it turns your wallet into a launch wallet. And that's perhaps the most efficient use of words that I can imagine in trying to describe this, because that's exactly what it does. Essentially, when you're saying a launch wallet, what does that mean? That you could have something thin fly out of your wallet. Whatever you would normally carry in your wallet, it could shoot out. In other words, it could shoot out a credit card. It could shoot out your driver's license. It could shoot out a photo if you wish. It could, you know, if you wanted to have a card in there, I guess you could have a card that would shoot out. You can have your money to shoot out. A variety of things, whatever is going to be flat or folded or kind of plastic or heavy-like, it can be shot out of your wallet. And when I say shot out of the wallet, essentially that you would have your wallet on the table, on the bar, wherever that you're performing. And whenever you're ready, basically you just tap on the wallet. And when you do, that releases this little mechanism and that will allow whatever is inside to go shooting out into your hand. It actually goes skittering across the tabletop to your waiting hand, which you have a couple of feet away. I mean, it's not just like it sticks out a little bit. It goes, it launches it. It just shoots it out really across there. And the gimmick itself is really a beautiful thing. It's well made. Comes with, as you might imagine. I mean, it's fairly low tech, I guess, from the standpoint that it is some plastic and some rubber bands. That's all I'll say about it. But it does come with a supply of rubber bands, such that if they should wear out, don't work well, or break, or whatever, that you have some backups. Plus, as they describe in the DVD, you could use just regular rubber bands because it's not something that is going to be seen by the audience necessarily at all because of the way that this thing is made. Now, having said all that, I do like this a lot. I think it's very clever and it's something that you could use for a variety of effects, even just something if you're not even really doing magic. If you just want to impress someone or that you're at the store or something, you know, or that you place your wallet on the table and then you tap it and your credit card shoots out and you hand it to the clerk. Something like that, even. Or, of course, at the bar, if you're wanting to have some money that's folded to shoot out, that'd be kind of cool. But the having said all that, I was going to say that this does not work with all wallets. It does not work with my wallet. I actually have a wallet which is known as the world's thinnest wallet that you can go to allet.com, ALL-ETT.com. These things are made from sailcloth material, and they are awesome. Everybody I talk to about them, you know, they go and purchase those. I think I've got a link, in fact, on the Magic Word Podcast. If you go over there to the store, I believe it may be my Amazon store or something. Anyhow, that they do make a nice wallet for like $15 or something in a variety of colors. And nevertheless, that's what I use. But this will not work with that kind of wallet, is my point. And there are several other wallets this will not work with. Let me just say that if you're contemplating this, it might be something that you might want to use another wallet or change wallets, just so this way that you could do this effect because it's that cool. I will say that if your wallet is the kind that folds open and then has credit cards kind of on both sides, that is, that you can see where there are slots that the credit cards will go in there, but most importantly, that at the bottom of the fold of the wallet, there would be an opening or a hole. That's all I'll say, is the, which that hole will then feed up into the upper compartment or the one behind where you normally will carry your bills, if you understand what I'm saying. As I'm describing this, I'm using my hand gestures as if you can see what the heck I'm trying to show you. So anyhow, again, to say that you would open your wallet as you normally would, and it's going to be width-wise, not lengthwise. So this way that the cards are, as you're looking at your credit cards on the left and right-hand side, that they are horizontal, they're long ways, is they're put in those little slots. And then in the fold on the bottom, again, would be a hole where that, if you open your wallet, you'll know what I'm talking about. If it doesn't have that, you'll also know what I'm talking about, where the thing has to work in order to feed into back behind where the bills would normally be. So having said that, I'm just saying that is something that you might want to consider. If you have that kind of a wallet that you use as your everyday wallet, then this is something that you can carry with you every day and be prepared almost instantly. I mean, it's something that doesn't take but just a moment to prepare and to get ready to shoot out whatever it is, your credit card, your driver's license, if you anticipate you're going to be needing this to give to somebody. There are a couple other smaller preparations, but anyhow, it's minor. So I think that this is a pretty cool trick. And again, it's called Launch by Sans Minds, and I would recommend this. Close to highly, I would say. This is on a scale of 1 to 10, probably about 7 or 8. Definitely it's up there. I'd say that this is a good one. So there you have it. 4 different items, completely different, and also on a different scale as far as whether I like them or not, that are available from your favorite magic dealer, like theperfecttrick.com, and that all come from Murphy's Magic Supplies. And again, I want to thank Murphy's Magic Supplies for giving us these tricks for review, and also for theperfecttrick.com for sponsoring the Magic Word Podcast. Well, that's going to be a wrap for this week, and I want to thank you guys again for coming back each week to the Magic Word Podcast and for listening and also for subscribing. And if you don't, then go ahead and subscribe your favorite way. You can go, of course, over to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you'll see a tab that says Subscribe to the Magic Word. And you can see all the variety of ways, whether you go through iTunes, whether that you download through your RSS feed or a podcatcher, there are Stitcher, golly, so many different ways that you can subscribe, and this way you won't miss another single episode. So make sure to subscribe and help our subscription base grow, and also that you can help us by going to iTunes if you are an Apple user, and going to the iTunes store where that you can find the podcast for the Magic Word and leave your 5-star comment. I would appreciate that. That helps boost our audience then also. So next week, I'm going to go back to the one-hour chats that I have with my guests. This week, again, it was kind of abbreviated. A couple of weeks ago, we had another one that was abbreviated just with Bill Malone and Charlie Fry and company. And so both of that one and this one were, again, a little bit shorter than what I normally do, which gave me time to get to some of these reviews that have been stacking up here for a while. So that, I hope you guys have enjoyed my take on whenever that you're going to be going out and buying some magic, that you will have a better idea of at least what I think of it, and you can make your own decision, because what may work for you may not for me, and vice versa. On the other hand, that you might enjoy these podcasts when I do talk about reviews of products, and I hope you do. And so again, that next week we'll go back to one of the podcast conversations that I had recorded earlier with one of my friends, and I know that you're going to enjoy that. I'm not just sure which one we're going to put out there yet. But if you subscribe to the newsletter, and if you go to, again, to the tab that says Subscribe to the Magic Word Podcast, at the bottom of that, there is a place that says Subscribe to our newsletter. And it's free, and it's very easy, very simple. I'm not going to take much of your time. Whenever the newsletters go out, it just says, here's who we're going to be talking to this week, and also here's a preview of who I'm going to have next week. By the time that that newsletter goes out, I do have an idea of who I'm going to put on for the following week. So you can follow that then as well. Plus, links to the products that I had reviewed in that week's podcast. So anyhow, please subscribe to our newsletter. So enough of all that. We're going to see you next week. And so until then, stay well, get booked, and if you're going to tell a story, make it worth hearing. This is Scotty out.